Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 99, recorded February 6th, 2011.
And seeing as it is episode 99 this week...
Next week, it will be episode...
Dun-dun-dun!
100.
So we're pretty excited about that. So please join us for our 100th episode!
Because how often do you have a 100th episode?
Only once.
About as often as you have a 100th birthday? Maybe more often than that.
Probably more often.
Probably anyway, not very much more often.
So we're pretty excited about that. So, what we would like to do is ask you to just spread the word about Aquarimax for our 100th episode. You know, invite a fishy friend, meaning someone who likes fish.
Not someone you can't trust.
Suspicious. Right. If you haven't liked us on Facebook yet and you have a Facebook account, you could do that. Check out our YouTube videos if you haven't done that. You know, join us on Twitter, something like that. Or contribute for the first time if you haven't yet.
That's a great idea.
You know, something like that. To commemorate our 100th episode, that'd be lovely. Speaking of YouTube, which I did just a few moments ago, we have a new YouTube video on vinegar eels, so if you haven't seen that, please check it out on YouTube. All right.
Now, it's very, very helpful.
Yeah. Let's introduce our contributors for the day, shall we?
Yes, we will first be hearing from Ken Jones, who is the voice of the Prince of Ponds podcast, and then from Brian in Idaho and Charlie in North Carolina.
Yes, and Ken Jones of the Prince of Ponds podcast also is producer of other podcasts like Pet Life Radio. I was on Pet Life Radio, what were you thinking?
With our frog, Hito.
With Hito, and talking about freshwater shrimp and so on, so... It's cool to get some questions from Ken, and there is also a couple surprises coming up that relate to Ken, but we will leave you in suspense until episode 100. So, there you go. You'll have to stay tuned for that. But he had some comments and questions. Let's go to his question first. He had a question about... Well, he had a comment saying that he appreciates our discussions of invertebrates, especially, and had a question.
He says, what would be your two top choices of freshwater shrimp for an aquarium of 6.2 to 7.5 pH and 82 degrees?
Okay. Well, first of all, I like this question. For the benefit of listeners, we're not talking about one tank that fluctuates from 6.2 to 7.5, because that would be a bit scary.
That would be a pretty big fluctuation.
Yeah, that would be a pretty big fluctuation. You wouldn't want to put shrimp in something that was bouncing between those... pH values if you wanted to have happy shrimp. So, but he's asking, if you have tanks in this range, what shrimp would you put in tanks of those ranges? If I make that clear, I hope I made that clear what I meant.
I think so.
Now, it does depend on your inhabitants, of course, but let's assume you have small, innocuous fish that aren't likely to damage the shrimp. Okay? Now, as one of our contributors, Juliet, has mentioned, these shrimp, of course, are generally happier if they're with other shrimp. But let's assume you're putting them with fish, and you've got some fairly gentle fish that aren't going to attack them. I would say that my two species would be red cherry shrimp, and by saying red cherry shrimp, I mean Neocardina denticula sinensis. I believe that's the right scientific name. That's the species, but not necessarily the color variety. So red cherry shrimp, yes, but there are also orange ones, yellow ones, blue ones, and wild type coloration that range from almost black to almost transparent of the same species. I wouldn't recommend mixing color varieties because you'll get who knows what, but you
might
could
get
put
something
any,
interesting.
You might, but you could put any one color variety in there. Mm-hmm. They are one of the hardiest shrimp, one of the easiest to get a hold of, and one of the more prolific shrimp. So I would say they're a good bet to go in there. Amano shrimp would be another one, too. They're a little bigger. They're not so colorful. They won't breed. They will probably mate and produce eggs. I've had lots of Amano shrimp do that. That's a very common occurrence. But the young won't survive in fresh water. They need to have a period of time in water of higher salinity. So,
brackish water or straight salt water?
Yes. My understanding is that in Japan, where they are from, they spawn, the young spend a period of time in the ocean and then swim upstream.
Kind of like salmon.
Something like that. Yeah, I believe it's sort of backwards, though, because salmon spawn in freshwater and the babies go down towards the ocean. It's kind of the opposite, but something like that. So
interesting.
They don't survive in freshwater, but they'll thrive and do well, and they're both good in algae, you know, as algae eaters. They're both hardy, and they're both easy to find. So I would say those would be my top two. There are lots of other fun shrimp, too, but I would say then, you know, go for those first. Another possibility, if I were going to say a third, would be ghost shrimp, which referred to a whole bunch of species that show up in pet stores as feeder shrimp. They're pretty hardy, and they're kind of fun in tanks, and they cost almost nothing. So
are they see-through or something? That they call them
ghost
shrimp?
They tend to be quite transparent, yes. And they're not quite as good at eating algae, although they will eat some. And they're not quite as easy to breed, although I've bred them, but they're somewhere between a mono shrimp and cherry shrimp in difficulty of breeding.
Okay.
Those would be my third. But he only asked for two, so I guess I'm going a little far.
It's okay. Go the extra shrimp.
Yeah. 82 degrees. It's a little high for shrimp. I mean, they prefer lower temperatures, these shrimp that I'm talking about in general, but they can do all right. I mean, I've kept shrimp that warm before without problems.
And they've been fine.
Yeah. So you can do it. Okay. All right. He also had a comment about fish rooms, because we've talked about fish rooms.
Oh, yes.
And Ken, of course, has set up several.
Quite a bit of experience.
Yeah, lots of experience with all kinds of things relating to fish. And he wanted to add a suggestion regarding shelving for tanks in a fish room. He said he uses the cement blocks, the cinder blocks, that you can go get at
Home
Improvement Store. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he stacks them with 4x4s for the tank supports. And he waterproofs the 4x4s with Varathane, you know, that paint-on kind of varnishy stuff. And he creates two banks this way, one directly above the other, and then adds a frame to support lights, electrical outlets, and PVC piping for air and or water delivery. You can put that above the tank and attach it to the 4x4s that are below, and it makes it's quick and it's easy and it's very strong.
Did he send us a picture?
He didn't send us a picture of that. But,
ooh, maybe he could send us a
picture.
That
would be cool if he did,
yeah.
But I think a lot of our listeners, the ones who are, you know, thinking about doing a fish room, get an idea from this, and that's a good idea. I mean, it's pretty stable, strong stuff, and that's a good way to do it. And it's pretty cheap, considering what you need to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cheap building material to be able to do what you need to do with it. So, nice. Thank you for that suggestion. I like that. I bet Roger likes that, too.
He's
the original fish room request guy.
All kinds of good ideas.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Ken, and we'll look forward to next week and our surprises that we will withhold for the time being.
Okay, we're going to go to Brian in Idaho. And Brian says, I've got a question for you this week. About 2 weeks ago, my female bristlenose placo suddenly came down with a case of what appeared to be, I'm probably going to say this wrong, mycobacterium infection.
Oh, that was fine.
Oh, yay for me. Oh, Popeye and body bloat. That sounds delightful.
Yeah.
And now another fish is starting to exhibit early symptoms. My understanding through reading my copy of Aquariology, Fish Disease and Water Chemistry is that these symptoms are caused by liver or kidney failure due to the bacterial infection. It also says that this is a really common bacteria genus and is found in soil all over the world and is normal in aquatic environments. It says the book is really helpful in a possible diagnosis and source. The authors say that water changes will help keep bacteria populations lowered and that adding vitamin C, E, and B complex to fish diets helps keep fish immune systems as robust as possible. Just like people. That was me. That wasn't him saying just like people. That was just me. Just so you know. So my question is, do you know of a good way to add these vitamins to a fish diet? I haven't found a good fish food soak for these vitamins, and I don't really want to add fresh fish like salmon to their diet for fear of adding a fish virus or bacteria to the tank as well as fouling the water.
Okay. Well, Brian, thank you for this great question and a great series of comments and questions, actually. I have been wondering lately if mycobacterium has been causing a problem that I've had, because I know a few episodes ago I mentioned problems with rainbow fish. For a while, I thought it was getting better, but I have lost a couple of rainbow fish again from similar things, from body bloat type symptoms. And I'm wondering if mycobacterium is the problem. And I've been reading about this, and I've read a couple of interesting things. One, that the bacteria thrive when they are in contact with lipids. And so making sure that there aren't any lipids like making slicks in part of the on the part of the water surface is important. It can help reduce them. And apparently, since they're always around, they wait until there's something going on that immunocompromises the fish or something that allows the bacteria to proliferate. This is my sort of supposition, is that that's what's happening. And then that's when they attack, because they apparently they're almost always in aquariums and everything mm-hmm. like that, but you get fish that are symptomless for forever, for years. But then sometimes you get a tank where it shows up, and it showed up with my rainbow fish. Anyway, I've got a few ideas for adding the vitamins, and some of these are things I haven't tried, and some of them are things I have tried, so we'll talk about this and see what might possibly help. One is that as far as vitamin B complex goes, I have used vitamin B complex liquid intended for humans, for fish.
The sublingual kind?
Yeah.
Just having the little eyedropper?
See, I'm glad you brought up sublingual, because I wasn't going to remember that.
That was my fabulous word for the day.
Yeah, there you go. See, so we have this vitamin B complex that you're supposed to put under your tongue, and I guess some of it absorbs through in your mouth while it's there under your tongue, and then you swallow the rest or whatever. So anyway, that's the way it's supposed to work. But you can also add it to a food soak, and it's pretty palatable. I mean, I know Kelly would disagree with me that it's palatable.
I think it tastes like vomit.
But it's better than a lot of things, so I think it might not be as bad for the fish.
The fish probably won't care the other as much foods as would I be. Do.
But you could use it in a food soak, and it's pretty concentrated. Mm-hmm. So I think it might be a decent way to get the vitamin B2 fish.
And it's available fairly widely.
Yeah.
You can find it in a grocery store, or, you know, Walmart or
anything like that. Where do we usually get it?
A Smith's.
Smith's Market, actually. Which is a local place,
yeah.
So you wouldn't
but
get that.
It's but it's a Kroger store, if you've got a Kroger store around you.
Yeah, from the Kroger family of companies or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, they're fairly common around the U.S., just different names. But anyway, stores like that have it, and I read about it in For What It's Worth, which is a compendium of For What It's Worth articles from Freshwater and Marine Aquarium magazine from years ago. Like from maybe the early 90s or something. I'm not mm-hmm. sure when it was from. Something like that. But anyway, someone was purporting its use for helping to heal fin damage in fish. If they supplemented their diet with this B vitamin liquid, it tended to help their fins heal quickly. But it would also work for anything that you want vitamin B delivery. Mm-hmm. And it, since it's liquid, you can use it in a food soak. So there you go. Another idea. Of course, a good way to get vitamins to organisms is by giving them natural food that's rich in those vitamins. And sweet potatoes are a pretty good source of vitamin C. And
those are much yummier.
Bristlenose plecos like sweet potatoes.
I like sweet potatoes.
Yeah, and they're also
I'm
full
not
of
even bristly.
Beta-carotene. Beta-carotene is good for bristlenoses, too. It helps enrich their colors. But our LFS Fish for You, which is pretty good, local fish store, used to feed their plecos, they give them slices of raw sweet potatoes. And I've done it too, although I've noticed that if you give them too much or you leave it in there too long, you can get a bacterial bloom because it's full of sugars.
Right.
And the bacteria go for that. So, anyway, you'd have to be careful with that.
So
but
if
it
they
would
don't
be
finish it within a certain amount of time, take it back out?
Yeah, I would take it out in like 24 hours.
Okay.
But they will eat it. I've had good experience with them eating it. Or you just put a thin slice in, of course. But that way you get vitamin C and vitamin A. And that vitamin A isn't one of the ones you were talking about, but you get...
It's always a healthy thing,
yeah,
though.
It's still a healthy thing. Another idea that I had is homemade gel foods. It's been a while since I've messed around with homemade gel foods, but I have done it. And...
But perhaps you should tell us how to make homemade gel foods after the break.
Okay, let's do that.
This isn't a commercial, because it's not trying to sell you anything. It is, however, the part where we shamelessly encourage you to be a part of the Aquarimax audio show by calling and leaving a message any time of the day or night at 801-477-0629. If you don't want to actually talk, but you do have a comment or question, you can just send us an email to info@aquarimax.com. There. That wasn't so painful now, was it?
All right, so we're back, and we were talking about homemade gel foods. Anyway, gel foods, you can look up recipe for do-it-yourself gel food for fish or homemade gel food or so on, but the basic idea is you use gelatin, unflavored gelatin, and you add blended vegetables and various protein sources and vitamins and so on to it.
Okay.
Now, my idea, and this is just what I expect, I haven't done any empirical research on this, but I expect that if you put vitamins in gel food, the fish would end up ingesting a lot of it before it would end up just dissolving uselessly into the water column. And I don't know...
You're talking like powdered vitamin form or...
Whatever vitamin form you put in there, it's just, okay, it's going to be trapped by the gelatin long enough for the fish to ingest it. That's my idea. And I don't know how effective that would be, but I just expect that would be the case. And I'm thinking that this would work especially well for vitamin C and B vitamins, if you just added a supplement to the gel food as one of the ingredients, because they're water-soluble. And so they'd get caught in the gelatin. Fat-soluble E, I'm not sure, because
it might not mix up.
It might not mix up as well, but I'm not sure. But I'm thinking maybe when you make the gelatin, it would kind of float up to the top and make a thin kind of slick, and then when you put it in the water, the slick goes up to the top. You know, I don't know for sure if it would do that, but maybe you could use lecithin as an emulsifier.
Can you actually get lecithin in the store? Do you have to get it like a health food store?
You can get it at health food stores and stuff. And that might be worth a try. I mean, I haven't messed with that too much, but it would be, you know, you can use it to enrich your own brine shrimp and things like that, so it might work. It's just something to explore, not something I'm saying, I've done this, try it too, the way I did it. I'm just thinking, this might be worth looking into. Yeah. And most gel food recipes do call for boiling the water, and I don't know how heat-stable the vitamins are. It probably depends on the form of the vitamin, and depends on a lot of things. I've always thought, well, boiling the heck out of, you know, this food is not going to be that good for it. But I think what I've done in the past, and it's been a while since I made gel food, as I mentioned, but I think I boiled the water, added the gelatin, let it cool somewhat, and then added the vegetable ingredients. Right, not so it's solid, but enough so that it's cooled a little bit, and then I add some of the vegetable, blended vegetables and meat and those sorts of things that you add to it. By meat, I mean things like shrimp. I don't mean like beef. Anyway. Okay. And it's also true that vitamin C doesn't have that much of a shelf life. But I guess freezing it probably helps, because you do keep it in the freezer. And if you're making small batches and using it frequently, it'd probably be better for the vitamin C and better for taste. So that might help. I mean, it is a good topic, I think. And if... Mm-hmm. Any of you out there have experimented with those particular vitamins? Because, as Brian mentioned, he hasn't found a decent food soak for those particular vitamins. Then let us know any experiences you've had along those lines that might be helpful.
If you have a gel food recipe that's been passed down through the generations. Of your fish, yeah.
There you go. Okay.
Your fish's great-great-grandmother's gel food recipe.
Yeah, you're welcome to share anything along those lines.
Okay,
and thank you, Brian.
Oh, yes, thank you, Brian. We are going to hear from Charlie and his girlfriend Candace now.
They're in North Carolina.
North Carolina, that's a lovely place. We heard from Charlie last year. He had a question last year, and I believe...
You mean last episode?
Did I say last year?
Yes. That's okay.
That's not what I meant to say.
You meant last episode, yeah.
But hey, when I've been introducing it, I haven't said 2011 once.
That's
so
true.
It's not too bad. But last week, I believe you replied with a Yoda quote.
I did.
Which
or sort of did.
Paraphrased Yoda quote.
Yeah.
So he says... He and his girlfriend laughed a solid 5 minutes about the Yoda comment. They're big Star Wars fans, too, so...
I'm glad they appreciated it.
Yes, it's nice to know one's bizarre references and quotes are appreciated.
Yeah.
He also goes on to say that his girlfriend Candace is new to the hobby and is thinking about starting a tank of her own. We already have a microworm culture, cherry shrimp, and Daphnia phytoplankton going. Also, some fairy shrimp eggs are on the way. We learned about the fairy shrimp from our show. Oh, yay. Our fish are going to be fat and happy.
Indeed they are. It sounds like a great start for a variety of interesting things to feed your fish. All right. Oh, then...
And then he says, I got the old episodes downloaded and onto iTunes. I was confused because when you click the download link, it takes you to a new page and starts playing the audio track. I figured out that I could right-click and save. Don't know if there's a way you can get the download link to pull up the DL screen to open or save file. Hope that makes sense. Not a huge deal, but I thought it may save you some trouble in the future, as I've heard the same thing asked on several earlier episodes.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think in the past when people were asked about this, I misunderstood what they were asking, but I think you made it... something you said, the way you said it, popped into my mind. It made sense. I'm getting it.
Yay!
Okay, so... I think for now, when you go to the new page, you click on the download link on the main AquariMax podcast page, and it pulls up, starts playing the audio track. This depends on your browser, what browser you have. Some browsers will do that, some browsers, I guess, won't do that. But for right now, when you right-click on that player that opens up, you right-click on the player, that, as you suggest, is the best way to do it for now. We're going to try to see... if we can adjust the feed so that all the episodes show up on iTunes and you can download them all from there.
We're working on it.
Yeah, until we can do that, that is the best way to do it. So thank you for pointing that out.
Indeed. And he says he has a new idea for us. He says, my girlfriend and I sort of stumbled upon this when I couldn't find spray paint. I'm sure this has been done before, but it's not mentioned very often, if at all. Painting your own background with acrylics. It's fun! You can paint with acrylics in your living room watching TV. If you're not the artsy type, you can go with a solid color or try mixing up a color of your choosing. The paint is easily scraped off with a credit card when semi-wet, if you mess up like I did. If you don't like it, after it's totally dry, you can use some vinegar and a bit of scraping to get it off. I haven't experimented with this, so I can't say for sure how easy it is. Acetone will take it off too, but would be risky near the water column.
Yeah, I imagine so. But yeah, this is a good idea, using acrylics, because it's pretty easy, like he says, and it's fun. So let's listen to his tips that he's got for doing it.
Says, number one, if you have a large portable mirror, this will help see through the front of the tank while painting, so you can see what it's going to look like.
Yeah, you paint from the back and you see from the front.
That's a very good idea. Number two, if you choose to mix colors, use a lot of paint so you won't run out before you're finished. And I guess you don't have to mix it up again and not quite get the shade right.
Exactly.
Save the extra paint in an airless container or Ziploc for touch-ups and avoid wasting paint. Number three, you don't have to lay the paint on thick. Number four, remember that only the first coat of paint will show through. I know this is obvious, just something to keep in mind. It's easy to forget while painting.
Cool. And he's also attached a picture of the background that they painted onto the 25-gallon. The tank is very new, and the water is still cloudy from the sand, he says, but you still get a good idea from the picture of how it can work out. So thank you for sending that. This is a really cool idea.
That is a cool idea.
Yeah. And if anybody decides to try that out, please send us a pic, too, and we can show how that works. Very neat.
All right. Good idea.
Well, this just about brings this episode to a conclusion. So once again... we would love it if we could get you to, if you haven't already liked us on Facebook, to do so and get as many likers as we can before our 100th episode.
And if you have liked us on Facebook and you have fishy friends who don't know about us or haven't liked us yet, then invite them.
Indeed. And send us everything. Well, everything meaning any sort of fishy comments or questions that you have, pictures, whatever, that you would like to share in next or upcoming episodes. And in the meantime, may the fish be with you. Thank you for listening to this edition of the AquariMax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info
at aquarimax.com.